The Race for a Transatlantic Exchange.
Marketplace Morning Report is produced in association with the University of Southern California.
From American Public Media in Los Angeles, I'm Scott Jagow. Both the NASDAQ and the New York Stock Exchange are trying to buy financial markets in Europe. One's having success, the other isn't. The London Stock Exchange just told its shareholders to reject the NASDAQ's bid. London says the offer is way too low. But the shareholders of Euronext overwhelmingly approved a merger with the New York Stock Exchange. The NYSE votes on the deal today. More now from Steve Tripoli.
Expect a resounding yes vote from New York Stock Exchange shareholders today. New York needs a European beachhead in the competitive world of stock markets. Europeans once worried that this marriage would mean strong American regulation that would hurt their companies. Kurt Schacht is with the Center for Financial Market Integrity. He says neither U.S. nor European rules are likely to prevail at first.
It will be like sort of any other global corporation that has operating businesses in different countries that have to operate under different legal and regulatory structures.
James Cox at Duke University says global stock market mergers will eventually lead to a blend of regulatory styles, and he worries that will lead to less protection for all investors.
Because there's going to be regulatory competition, and that's going to be competition that's going to move things to the lowest common denominator, not the highest standard.
In theory, at least, these mergers should help investors. They're supposed to lower transaction costs and make it easier to diversify into foreign stocks. I'm Steve Tripoli for Marketplace.
If your company told you it's going to end your pension plan, would you feel a lot of loyalty? You wouldn't think so, but today the government's expected to give Delta Airlines the go-ahead to stop pensions for its pilots. And yesterday, those pilots rallied in support of their employer. From WBUR, Kurt Nickisch explains what gives.
Delta pilots have seen their salaries and pensions get slashed year in and year out as the airline struggles to stay aloft. That might make you want to badmouth your boss, but hostile takeovers make strange bedfellows. At Logan Airport in Boston yesterday, Delta pilots rallied in support of the carrier's rejection of a $9 billion buyout bid from U.S. Airways. Pilot Norman Abair would rather have the penny-pinching boss he knows than the debt-ridden boss he doesn't.
In the long term, as an employee, you look at that as a company that's effectively booby-trapped for another bankruptcy.
While there won't be any rallies today, Abair and the pilots' union are backing Delta's request to have the federal government take over their pension obligations. They hope it'll bolster the airline's reorganization plan. It's now up to Delta's creditors and a bankruptcy judge whether the plan becomes the carrier's ticket to solvency. In Boston, I'm Kurt Nickisch for Marketplace.
The last couple of years, a lot of people got into the housing market with subprime mortgages. Now they might rue the day. The Center for Responsible Lending says 20% of those loans will probably wind up in foreclosure. That means more than 1 million people will lose their homes and $75 billion in equity. Subprime loans now make up more than a quarter of the mortgage market. This is Marketplace. We talk a lot about the Federal Reserve on this program. Stacey Vanek Smith tells us how the Fed got started in this History of Business segment.
In the early 1900s, the international community was appalled at the U.S.'s financial situation. The country's banks were feeling fat and happy because of hefty gold reserves, and they started extending credit right and left. Times were high and business boomed. But demand began to slow, and the U.S. had no central bank to buffer financial institutions from economic shock. It got worse, and people grew wary of banks and started withdrawing their money. The banks were forced to suspend payments, and the economy screeched to a crawl. So this week, back in 1913, Woodrow Wilson and the Congress passed the Federal Reserve Act. It created a network of 12 central banks all across the U.S. To this day, the banks help stabilize the economy by controlling interest rates and the flow of currency. I'm Stacey Vanek Smith.
The Morning Report comes to you from American Public Media.
Marketplace Morning Report is supported by Mellon Financial Corporation, helping financially successful individuals and families protect and maximize their assets through the practice of wealth management. Mellon.com. And by Medtronic, supporting the Children's Heart Foundation's It's My Heart, a book for families affected by heart defects. Copies at childrensheartfoundation.org.
This is Marketplace. I'm Scott Jagow. A mixed session on Wall Street yesterday. The Dow put on 30 points to 12,471, another record close. The NASDAQ was down 6 points to 2429. The S&P 500 added 3 to 1425. I don't know if you know this, but the tax laws on charitable giving have changed. The new rules apply to your next tax return, so keep them in mind if you're making a holiday donation. Here's the main point. You need a receipt for every cash contribution, from the Salvation Army to the collection plate at church. So noting your thoughtfulness in your diary won't work as proof anymore. All told this year, Americans are expected to give more than $200 billion to charity. But commentator Robert Reich says he's a little concerned about where some of the money is going.
Lots of charitable dollars, especially from the wealthy who have the most to donate, are going to culture palaces, to the operas, art museums, symphonies, and theaters, where they spend much of their leisure time, and to the universities they once attended and expect their children to attend, perhaps with the help of what's known as affirmative action for legacies. These aren't really charitable contributions. They're more like investments in the lifestyles the wealthy already enjoy and want their children to have, too. They're also investments in prestige, especially if they result in the family name engraved on the new wing of the art museum or symphony hall. Now, it's their business how they donate their money, but not entirely, because, you see, charitable donations are deductible from income taxes. This year, the U.S. Treasury will be getting about $40 billion less than it would if the tax code didn't allow charitable deductions. By the way, the government now spends less than $40 billion a year on temporary assistance for needy families, which is what's left of welfare. Now, I can see why a contribution to, say, the Salvation Army should be eligible for a charitable tax deduction. It's helping the poor. But why exactly should a contribution to the Guggenheim Museum or Harvard University? Not long ago, New York City's Lincoln Center had a gala dinner supported by the charitable contributions of the leaders of the hedge fund industry, some of whom will be receiving billion-dollar bonuses in the next few weeks. Now, I may be missing something here, but this doesn't strike me as charity. I mean, poor New Yorkers don't often attend concerts at the Lincoln Center. It turns out, in fact, that only an estimated 10% of all charitable deductions this year will be directed at the poor. At a time in our nation's history when the number of needy continue to rise, when government doesn't have the money to do what's necessary, and when America's very rich are richer than ever, we should revise the tax code, limit the charitable deduction to real charities, and have a happy holiday.
Robert Reich was Labor Secretary under President Clinton. He now teaches public policy at the University of California, Berkeley. Share your thoughts with us at marketplace.org. In Los Angeles, I'm Scott Jagow. Thanks for listening. Have a great day.
American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.